It'll actually start to happen. This is the princess and or the priest recording. Hopefully it's going to make, you know how often these things make, LJ.
Yeah.
Because we say something and it's like, oh, I don't think I want people to really hear that. Honesty is a dangerous commodity. And being too revelatory, that can cause a lot of problems too. So we avoid this. I remember taking a little bit of heat from people because not giving my children as much advice as you're supposed to. You know? I know one of my first great societal sins that I did was that I told my kids I wasn't paying for their college.
Or buying them a car for their 16th birthday.
Yeah, and that's the, well, you know. Anyway. And Brian says, yeah, it says, you aren't a good parent, and that's how it's measured, by if you pay for your kids' college education. Then you're going, wow. I said, no. Because I don't want to send my kids to college for no reason. You know?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I think my undergraduate degree really wasn't worth much, you know?
To
be honest.
I beg to differ. Your master's degree was
worth more. No, I said my undergraduate.
Oh, your undergraduate. Yeah, but don't you have to get your undergraduate in order to get the master's?
Now, I didn't get a master's in any field anywhere near my undergraduate degree.
That's true.
I mean, people say, oh, you got an underwater basket weaving? And I said, well, pretty close. Got into home economics. I don't want to downplay things that I learned in school, but can I be honest? A lot of things that I learned in school put me down a silly road, kind of a bad road.
Well, I'm glad you said that because I was expecting you to say a rat hole, and I was like, I don't think so.
No. I was around a lot of very, very nice people, and I'm grateful for that. So, it was good that way. Well, how do you feel about your college studies?
I never really used my degree. I mean, the job that I did eventually get almost a year after graduating was, because I had the degree, but it didn't make a difference in my pay or anything like that. And once I left that job to serve a mission, I never used my degree again. And to be honest, I wasn't using my degree in that job. It's not like I was in the showroom and you know, helping clients select different things. I was in the back on the computer making sure that the tile inventory was up to snuff so that when they came in with their orders, we had tile enough to fill their orders.
Right.
It had nothing to do with my degree.
But I think ultimately, you having an associate's degree helped you a lot.
Yes.
On several points. It didn't matter what the degree was really in, which was hilarious.
Right, yes. But, in, you know, when Social Security came in and said that I didn't have enough work credits, that I needed 5 more work credits, and I needed to get a job to do that so that I could get Social Security and Medicare, which is what I was more concerned about. And so the job that I got was because I had the associates.
Yeah.
And I said, I only have an associates. She said, I don't care what it's in, as long as you have the associates. It could be in welding for all I care. Yeah. And I'm not going to weld. Anyway.
Which is a funny thing, because it really shouldn't. If it doesn't matter what you got it in, why does it matter?
Yes. So, anyway, it helped me to be able to get my last 5 work credits. Because, I mean, otherwise I would have had to work like at Pizza Hut.
Which was really hard on you.
It was, because I had just hurt my back in Hawaii, and I just could not physically do it. And so, yeah. And I still have issues from time to time from that. I'm doing 85. Crap.
See, you start talking.
Anyway. yeah. So I'm grateful that I did have it. Because, you know, I love being a stay-at-home mom and being there for my kids and even homeschooling on occasion. The different kids, depending on how much effort they were putting into it. When they weren't putting in any more effort, I sent them back to school. It's like, you work better for them than you do for me. So you lost your privilege of staying home. Ha! Anyway.
That's Lisa. I'm with you.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Which comes back to my whole thing when people say, so, what advice did you give your children, you know? And I said, basically, you know, I said, don't go to college until where you're going requires it. So now, sometimes you just don't know where you're going. And you go, so the biggest thing that I've always told the kids about all this stuff is to pray and ask God. Of course, half of my kids, well, not half of them, but a reasonable proportion of my kids don't like God, or just that's just all junk. And it's like, okay, well, then you're going to be kind of rudderless, because I'm not, you know, it's like, I don't know.
And whatever you're doing is going to be a lot harder, because God won't be helping you.
Yeah.
You're all on your own.
This is, I don't know what the future holds at all. This is, you know, this is my parents had some general things to advise on, given their experience and the fact that the world still basically worked the same way it did as when my parents were, you know, getting most of their experience. It says now, so I don't have a clue what's coming. I have no idea. They go, well, should I go into AI? And you go, personally, I don't think much of AI. He says, but you know what? Ask God. Maybe it's going to be an amazing thing. Maybe you're going to get on with some wonderful place and it's going to be magnificent. I don't know. This is all I can tell you is the wisdom of the past when it comes to a lot of these things. This is, I don't think it's very reliable. It is a good about falling off of its trailer a little bit. It's not good. So we're on the road to Albuquerque. Because, yeah, I was reading an article this morning. Who is that passenger airbag, Nick Glass?
I don't know. You don't have your seatbelt on, perhaps?
How about that?
Look at that. It stopped. Boy, it's smarter than you think.
I don't know if it's smarter. It's more obnoxious than I think. Anyway. Thank you, I suppose. That's why I felt so good. I was all strapped in. I was reading that article, and it was saying that the most popular college degree right now has the highest unemployment rate. And I was interested to know which one it was, which they actually never tell you. You have to read the actual article, and you usually have to wait until the very end before they say. Because that's just the way that kind of writing goes now.
Yep.
Anyway, so they finally said it, and it was computer science, which has been the absolute go-to for so many people for the last 50 years. Some of the richest people have been computer scientists or people that were in that field. Whether they stayed in college or not. That was always the really hard part. You would look at all the most wealthiest and the most successful people, and most of them dropped out of college.
Yeah.
I did a whole little booklet on Steve Jobs and things that he has said about things. And the funny thing is now is, okay, Steve Jobs is one of those sorts. Another one that was one of those sorts is Bill Gates. Bill Gates never ended up getting
a degree.
Now, he's got lots of honorary doctorates now because everybody loves to take his money. And that's what you give out honorary doctorates for, which should give you an indication about the kind of racket higher education really ends up being. Anyway, the funny thing is, Bill Gates, when he was giving advice to his kids, telling them what to do, he told them to go to college and get a degree. I'm sure they came back and said, but Dad, you didn't.
Yeah.
And
don't do as I do as I say.
And to be really honest, that's tricky because if you say, well, if you would have stayed in and gotten your degree in, and it probably would have been computer science at the time, you would have missed the key opportunities that he was going for. You know? He was originally following in the footsteps of the real amazing people that started the whole computer industry, the whole computer revolution, which were a bunch of PhDs in this stuff. Mostly creating amazing things for the military. It's the old military and industrial complex, really, was what it was. That really doesn't work that way now. But it works to have a better degree. That's why I have had many of the jobs that I've had have been based off the fact that I had a master's degree in something that was at least allied to. I don't have a technology master's. I have management master's, which is hilarious because
you don't manage.
I don't manage. I don't really want to, but it still makes me look good because I don't know, people aren't very smart. I don't know. It's hard to say. Anyway, it's okay though. So when people ask, so what advice do you give young people? Say, pray, stay close to the Lord, go on a mission, and you will come back better situated with the Lord to get the kind of inspiration that you need.
But I think also, if you do serve a mission, you need to do it with all of your heart, mind, and strength. Not just go just to fill in the time.
Well, at the end of the day, I'd still tell even slack-jawed, I just went to church because my parents made me. I'd still tell those guys to go on missions. Because they might get a testimony while they're out. And you go, well, that's not what missions for. And you go, yeah, I know, still.
If you only convert yourself,
it says,
it's better than not converting anything.
Yeah, it says, and I think the brethren still looking at that way. Would they rather have better prepared people? They'd rather have people that already have testimonies that would be useful. So they go, absolutely. I said, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's about people getting testimonies. And they go, thank goodness the church isn't paying for these missions. Because I think we'd have a big problem with it. As long as the parents are doing it, that's okay. So, yeah.
Do you think that's why What's-His-Face is going just to college instead of a mission? Because he's got a scholarship for college, and he didn't have the money for a mission because he hasn't worked.
I think you should just go anyway. You know, if it was me, I'd say, I'll kick in some.
Me too.
You know, I bet you a lot of other people. We will, yeah. You know, and I look back on young men that we helped go on missions.
In the past.
And almost all of them are.
They've walked away.
Nothing, yeah. And they've all walked away from church. And you go, well, you know what? This is. We tried to give them a kind of experiences that would help do that. It seems like it almost all has to do with homosexuality. So it's all that DEI stuff. Boy, Satan has ginned up a really effective... way to get people just to say, I don't want anything to do with that church because they're a bunch of bigots. And you're going, well, that means that Jesus is a pretty big bigot. And so some of them even go to that level. I don't like Jesus because he's a bigot. Or I have my version of Jesus who just loves everybody. You know, kisses and hugs all around. Yeah. It's all about the love. And you go... I think it almost ends up being kind of a two-edged sword. The more that, what do you call it, junior general authorities and church officers pound on love, the more they set themselves up for walking people out of the church. You know, by saying, I don't think Jesus, Jesus isn't loving in the ways I think he should be loving. And you're going, but you guys all talk about how loving he is. And you're going, you know, and these guys push it, right? Well, He will love me so much that he throws down the red carpet in front of me, you know. And he makes sure I don't have any problems. He makes sure of this and he makes sure of that. Things like that. And you're going, you do know that the minute after you've preached so hard about this stuff and used all those loving appellations, says that means that the minute these people, it doesn't even have to be the young people, don't feel swaddled in
Jesus' love.
In this love stuff, they figure everything you've said is full of crap. And you go, you know what? I think you guys have set that up. And that's why I'm a guy that says, I don't talk a lot about love. Says, can I be honest? The scriptures don't talk a lot about it either. On occasion it does. It says everybody has swollen up to be the most important thing. Love, 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 love. It says, and yeah, it says the old questions that most of the detractors of the gospel always had about why does God let bad things happen to good people has just been amplified 1,000 times. I said, yeah. And to a certain extent, it is the distillation of everything Jesus ever did as being this wonderful, you know, as being just drenched in sickening, sweet, saccharine love.
Yeah, there's only a few spots where it talks about God's love for us, which is, like, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. And, like, love one another as I have loved you.
Yeah, it says, but take a look at how Jesus has authentically loved us. You know, and you're going, it says, well, the road's just against love. And you go, oh, you guys are just so dumb when you say stuff like that. You go, look at how Jesus loved us. Or how Jesus expressed the love. It says, and to a large extent, I said, I think it's really overblown. It says, don't do it, don't do it. But everybody does. The last conference, I just cringed at various points for just saying, please don't state it that way.
Because inadvertently, they stick in that loving, gentle answer or something. And it's like, that's not what the scripture said. It just says that Jesus said, Jesus said lovingly and gently. You're interjecting your own personal thoughts or feelings or whatever into the situation.
You're going, I'm so glad that you feel like you're just having a billion raindrops of love falling on your head every day. That's great. You said, but any rational person coming to it, anybody who has had some suffering, it says, can I tell you what the problem is to a lot of other people? A lot of what some of these people at General Conference say smacks of first world privilege. I'm just so blessed. It's because of God's love. And you're going, so what you're saying is,
those poor people in Africa that live in a cardboard box, they have nothing to eat.
That's right. God must not love them.
Apparently not.
And you're going, see, you've set yourself up. You've set yourself up horribly. And the problem is, there is plenty of people, even in the first world, that suffer for one reason or another, either due to their own choices and acts, or just because of circumstances. And you're going, so where is all this drippy, gloppy God's love for them? And you go, the way you guys have set it up, it's no wonder people look out at the expanse of the world, say there must not be a God, and just go off and try to have as much fun and pleasure as they can eke out. You know, this is, no wonder people start listening to Satan. Because what Satan says, I'm sorry, makes more sense. And you go, that's the bad part. So I don't know where you guys came off doing this, but it's a terrible thing to set up people like that to say basically that everything's going to be wonderful, all is well in Zion, you know. And it's like, guys.
Well, the scriptures talk about that too, that they'll be saying all this well in Zion.
Yeah, yeah, Zion prospered, then you go, well, yeah, but that doesn't mean you're a good person. Or whatever. And it says, and it really ends up being, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how wonderful God is at the end of the day. Although it does, but if you turn your back on him, he isn't going to wonderfully swoop down and exalt you for spitting venom at him. He doesn't do that. We don't get that impression. The entire expanse of the stories in the Old Testament and in the Book of Mormon, the New Testament's a different thing because it's not really telling a story. You know, it doesn't have the kind of length of breath. It's just a little sliver. Jesus is here. And this is what Jesus did. This is what everybody has to talk about. And a crapper load of letters from Paul. It says, you know, look at the whole scope. People turn on God, and guess what? He does not bless them. To be God's covenant people is a two-edged sword. If you say you're one of God's, and then you turn on him, this is
it's worse for you than if you had known God to begin with.
Yeah, at least then you were just an ignorant person. Anyway, so yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. So the getting back to advice about anything, and let me tell you, boy, the world is saturated with all kinds of advice.
Hi.
And competing advice. Don't listen to him, listen to me. And it's just, I think.
It's fraught with peril if you don't listen to me.
Well, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you'll die or something if you don't take my advice. And I haven't quite done the blog post that I've started working on about it. Goes back to the scriptures and talks about the whole thing about people having itching ears and gathering to themselves teachers. You have to understand that I'm struggling, and I don't think this is a unique struggle to our particular ward. I think all wards, to a certain extent, struggle with this. Maybe not all of them, but many. We're trying to get away from the gospel doctrine teacher motif of you have this amazing scriptorian who spouts scriptural sonnets to you, and you curl up around their ankles and rapt attention to everything that they have. And if I can be honest, since this is bad, because I really do like Skousen and Hugh Nibley, guys like that. And you kind of have to go, if it was so wonderful, why were they not general authorities? Why were they not this and that if they were so you know, if that was really the kind of thing that we needed to do. That's why you're always saying, okay, this is, we all go home, do our home-centered, church-supported, thank you. It's not even just study. That's just supposed to be the way that the church is supposed to operate by and large. We tend to think that the church is a bunch of buildings, a bunch of, a bunch of callings. You know, boy, you must be a really good person. They called you to be the bishop. You're going all, I don't know if that's really the criteria you use. I said, can I be honest? I think it may be. And you think that that's what the church is, when it's like, well, really what it ends up being is we need to follow the prophets and the apostles. This is, they are the people primarily held to account if they lead us astray. It says, and that's scriptural too. And you go, so those guys play a dangerous game. I think they need to have that over the doorway to their office, is to say, you're going to be held responsible for every person that you lead astray by something you say. And you go, oh my gosh, I'm going to be a lot quieter. It says, and when I have to say something, I'm going to work really hard to make sure that I'm not leading people astray. And you go, oh, see, this is interesting. Anyway, that we're trying to...
Don't offend them, which is really hard because being offended is a choice. So even though you are trying not to be offensive, they can choose to be offended anyway.
I think where that's used in the New Testament is mistranslated. I don't know what it should be. But yeah, I said, no. It says that's wrong, because let me tell you, if you're telling people to repent, a lot of people will take that as offensive. And it's like, no. It says, you can't hang your hat on that particular scripture translation. That would just say that everybody else has the ability to get you sunk to the bottom of the sea with a millstone around your neck, right? Because you don't make them feel good. And maybe that's where the whole love, 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 love things comes from. Is from people saying, hey, God's going to do something horrible to me if I make these guys feel bad. So I'm just going to talk about love, because that's the only safe thing to say, is how much God loves you. And then they can just decide whether they want to believe you or not. They're going, yeah, he says, I think that comes from bad translation that we haven't looked at again and said, don't take that. And it's in the Doctrine and Covenants a little bit too. And you go, well, is that fixed up? Is that what, you know, I don't know. Anyway, you have to be careful about that, because you can justify almost any activity or lack of activity and find the scripture to back you up. It's kind of a dangerous thing. It's why it's important to have modern prophets and apostles who are supposed to say, I think this is what this means. This is how we should proceed. It's always tricky, because a lot of the times the prophet and apostles don't agree. A lot of times. You say, well, they did in the past, and you go, oh, contrary. It was a known thing that there was a certain group of young apostles back in the early 1900s that thought the church should just go in a completely different direction than it was going in at the time. And there it was fractious. so I come back and I say, make sure that you stay close to the spirit. Learn to recognize the spirit.
Well,
the spirit will help you know what to do.
President Nelson said that too.
Sorry, what?
President Nelson said that too.
Yeah. Thank you. Good. I'm glad. Saved. And saying the things I say, and it's like, oh no, 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 no. Well, the apostles said, don't do it that way. It's like, great. So, anyway, yeah. Basic advice I give to everybody says, you know what? Stay close to the Lord. Do what it takes to have the Spirit near you always so that you can get the inspiration you need. Said, because it's going to be a, you know, the wisdom of men shall fail them. And I keep seeing this over and over again, you know. Generalized advice we're getting less and less of, you know. Jordan B. Hinckley said, be smart, or be, and he told everybody that they needed to get as much education as possible.
But that doesn't necessarily mean college education. You could self-educate yourself.
He definitely said it had to do with college. Everybody was going and getting their PhDs. Anyway. You know, it was a good generalized advice at the time. Yeah, he says, I don't want to think about how much student loan debt that particular piece of generalized advice generated. I hate to think.
I don't know either.
And sometimes the Lord's probably gonna steer you toward that thing. And getting into lots of debt to acquire some sort of education. If you feel the Lord's telling you to do it, do it. I didn't go back to get my master's until I got inspiration to do so. Because you can't trust wisdom, conventional wisdom. You know, it's like the whole thing, oh, go and get a degree in computer science and you'll always have a really good high-paying job doing this and that. I can't say much. I've profited very handsomely off things aligned with it. It says, but it doesn't mean it's always going to happen. I also saw that almost every place we were getting contracts with to do computer science stuff, it was all going to India because they were cheaper and just as good. But places like Microsoft where you go, oh yeah, those guys get a lot of computer science people. You go, yeah. Says, but guess what? They were the biggest ones fighting to make sure they got the visas to bring over cheap Indian labor to do it. Says, you had to compete with them. It says, and let me tell you, you put an Indian up against an American, and that Indian will beat you into the ground because they just work that much harder for it because they're accustomed to hard work and we're not. And you go, yeah, he says, your boss ends up being Indian. He says, and guess what? He prefers to hire Indians. And you go, well, that's not fair. And you go, tough, you know. He says, what about the DEI? And you go, you do know that's how the Indians got all they got in the first place was this DEI attitude. It's not for white people, you silly guy. It's for people like the Indians and black people. Mostly the military.
for LGBT.
That's okay. The Indians wipe out black people too. The only problem is DEI doesn't know exactly what to do about that. So they tend to put the black people up into upper management, you know, to say, oh, look, we're doing this whole thing for blacks. And you go, that's great. And they go, but all the people working for you are Indians. How come there's no black people working for you? It's just because they suck. Sorry. So no, white people do, too. So they'll go, no, yeah, of course not all of them. Ooh, look at that price, $269. We definitely need to come back here on the way home. If you want to put some in now, we can do that, too.
If we do, it won't be much.
Okay, well, it's up to you. It's up to you what you want to do. I think we can do the whole trip and still get gas in Santa Rosa and work out. But just know that God knows all this. And he'll steer you in right directions. And the generalized things that I'm talking about, you know, like, well, not all black people, not all Indians are like that. And you go, yeah, you're right. And you go, but that's kind of the way it works. And that's the supposition these people make. You're not supposed to do things based on skin color or ethnicity or nationality. And you go, you guys continue to be hilarious and say what shouldn't be, but yet what is. I go to church every Sunday. That means I'm fine. And they go, depends on what you're after.
Are you sure?
He says, yeah. Are you sure? Don't count on it. That's my big thing, right? Don't count on it. So yeah, my basic advice now to people is ask, keep applying the Lord for what you need. Be grateful for what you have, but don't be so grateful for what you have that you don't take further opportunities.
Yep.
Because the Lord might have better things in store for you. And how is he going to let you know about those things? And you go, that's tricky. It says you have to stay close to the Lord. And when you feel like it's time to jump, you need to be jumping. Anyway. Because you just don't know how things are going to go. You don't know how long you're going to live. Stuff like that. I was just looking at life expectancy in New Mexico, which is a couple of years shorter than the national life expectancy, which is really kind of a dumb measure anyway. Lisa and I were talking about pensions and stuff like that. And I said, oh yeah, I says the most important thing about a pension is they don't want you living too long. Because then you start screwing up the pension calculations. A person who's 105 years old and still getting a pension that they should have lost in their 60s because they should have dropped it at work. Can I tell you, honestly, I think that's why most of the masters of the universe want us to keep working. It says because at the end of the day, most of us die through the work that we do. You know? It's your employment that's most likely to get you killed. Oh, you're going to go ahead and get some gas?
Yeah.
Okay, well, this thing, we're going to have to stop this because I've never seen our recovery from stopping this really working out.
Sorry.
You have to understand, it's all like that. Those actuarial tables are used to try to get you so that some company can make more money off of you. And the longer you live, the less money they make, and they don't like that. the best thing to have happen is that you work until you're too sick to work, but that it doesn't immediately kill you. It kills you later after it's not going to cause your company any problems.
Okay.
Here you are. All right, we're taking a break. It's time to stop, and I don't know what thing's really going anyway. But there's the advice. Talk to you later. Bye.